Caleb Cleave and the Woman in Green, written and read by Tim Earle. Dear Fancy Nancy, I ain't a man of many words, but riding as I am, running from one place to the other fast, I need to care about something. Not that you are a something. I mean, a somebody, but not just anyone. You are that someone. You know that. I believe I made myself clear with that kiss. We may never meet again, and I'm real sorry to have just let out. I think you were half expecting it. Anyways, I want you to know I meant the feeling. As much as a man in my position can love a person, I promise you I do love you with every part of me, and I always will. I ain't never going to be nobody else. I shall keep faithful to you forever. I don't think you're going to love me the same way back. I mean, I ain't there to love. We did have something special, though, huh? Even for a short moment. I'll be thinking of you all the while I'm writing, and it feels good to care for you. I hope this letter makes the distance, even though we're miles and miles apart. Yours eternally, Caleb. Hot, dusty, dry as a bone, tired and wore out, kind of hurting inside. Need something to drink that's stronger than water. That last killing weren't a good one. I did warn the feller to give it up, but like most, he didn't listen. Thought he was faster, smarter. I told him speed ain't what matters, not even accuracy. It's not fearing and determination. Did everything to talk him down, though I could see Macaulay was getting impatient. He'd just as soon see the feller dead quick, so he could get on with business. The feller went for his colt. I didn't have no choice. I knew if I didn't aim to kill, Macaulay would have finished the feller off, once he felt safe, and for the hell of it. I was getting paid for this, to keep Macaulay protected, though he didn't hardly need it. There's always some young man with a reputation to uphold, the fastest man in town. But he ain't been out there in the big wide world. He knows it all, but he don't know nothing. This feller came out to Macaulay's ranch, all offended. About what, I never got to know. Looking for a fight. He found one. Wright was on my side, but it didn't feel like it. Now we're in town, heading for the mercantile. If looks could kill, we'd all be dead men. Macaulay, ranch hands, Josh Holborn, Pinky Ashton, on account of his permanently red eyes, two of the stupidest men I've ever met, and me. Who am I? Sometimes I ask myself the same question, along with how the hell did I get into this? My name is Caleb. Caleb Cleave, and I'm a gun for hire. Always been handy with sidearms. Been acquainted with many since my pa taught me how to use them. Navy Colt, Smith & Wesson, Remington. It's all weight and balance. The year is 1881, and I favor a Colt 45 Peacemaker. Don't know why they call it that. Ain't brought much peace. I wear it reverse army style from my right hand, holster high on my waist. Got another in my saddlebag, primed and loaded. Got an old cap and ball 36 and a derringer hid someplace that ain't nobody's business. A Winchester 76 is hitched to my saddlebag. Never had much time for rifles, but a man like me's got to have one. Mr. Macaulay, you don't need me right now, do you? I ask. No, Caleb, he replies. Go quench your thirst. He smiles. He doesn't have to ask where I'm headed. It was a day like this that I first met the man I'm working for now. I was drifting, like always. Wound up in a saloon. He came in. Had Pinky with him, and they sat at a table, having ordered a beer and a whiskey each. Now, I've always hated injustice, and my killings have been righteous, even if the law don't always see it that way. When Pinky threw his head back and laughed at something Macaulay said, he happened to catch the eye of a drunk leaning on the bar. "What's so funny?" says the drunk, and slowly turns to face their table. I take out my timepiece, press the clasp, and open it, wondering how many seconds or minutes this is going to take. I've seen it all before. "What's so funny?" the drunk repeats, and begins to stagger over to Macaulay's table. Macaulay and Pinky look at each other, both thinking the same thought. How the hell do we get out of this? Both are armed, like everyone in the place. It's equalized, but neither Macaulay or Pinky are gunmen. They carry their weapons for snakes, moving cattle and the like. Macaulay's killed and ain't afraid to, I learn later, but only when he's sure of his advantage. Pinky, on the other hand, is untried. "We don't want any trouble, mister," says Macaulay. Pinky says nothing and stares at his boots. Then Pinky looks up and says, "You're drunk." Macaulay gives Pinky a piercing, ice-cold stare. The drunk, barely standing, flips back his duster and is about to go for the pistol flapping loosely slung too low on his hip. Still, he's going to free the .44 from its holster quicker than Macaulay or Pinky can reach theirs. There's no reasoning with this man. In two strides, I'm by his side, and I've pistol-whipped him to the floor. "He's out cold," I say to the two men I'll be riding with soon. The barkeep and another feller pick up the drunk and carry him out. As they pass by me, the barkeep mutters, "Jimmy Fennel strikes again. It's a wonder he's still alive." I go to the doors and watch as they lay him on the sidewalk. Macaulay and Pinky are staring at me. They don't say a word. Pinky's mouth is hanging on the floor. "Let him sleep it off," says I. But before I knew it, the man who helped the barkeep, saying he's a friend, has grabbed a pitcher of water and thrown it over a Fennel, who shakes his head, rises to his feet, takes out his pistol, and shooting wildly, bursts back through the saloon doors, almost knocking me off my feet as he rushes by. He's screaming, "Where are you, son of a bitch?" A bullet ricochets off the ceiling and people are ducking. Fennel rubs his head, wipes his face, and turns, slowly realizing the man he's after is standing right there at the entrance to the saloon. Fennel is now suffering from whiskey, a bump on the head, humiliation, and stupidity. My .45 is holstered, so he deliberately raises his pistol, takes aim, cocks the hammer, and fires. I knew he would miss. He's wildly off mark. The bullet thuds first into the left saloon door and disappears somewhere into the world. I'm hoping no bystander is going to get hit, but the street is empty. They've all run for cover. I try talking to the man. "Mr. Fennel, you don't want to die here today. Just go home." Fennel takes aim again, this time more carefully. Now there's a chance I might take a bullet. I have no choice. My .45 leaps into my hand as though it's busting to perform. It's an almost unconscious action. In a split second, Fennel lies dead on the saloon floor. My shot has pierced his heart. Ain't much blood there, but when they roll him over, a good bit of his back is ripped out where my bullet went through. The world has slowed down, and I'm cautiously looking round to see if anyone else is going to be on me. But all I see is fear. Next thing I know, Macaulay's introducing himself and offering me a job. That was almost a year ago to the day. The only other killing I've done on his behalf was the young feller out at his ranch. Another town, another day. But they all knew the kid here. I buy a beer, down it in one, and buy another. I can feel their eyes on me, but they're calm. Pinky comes in, sidles up to me, and says unusually quietly for him, "Seems the boy was kind of liked." "Thanks for telling me, Pinky. Appreciate it." Pinky claps me on the shoulder. He don't get irony.
I'm mighty thirsty myself," says Pinky.
"Pour the man a glass," says I, and hand over coin. And then it happens. She glides down the stairs. All heads turn and eyes glaze over. Pinky stutters,
"Well, would you look at her?"
The most beautiful woman I've ever seen, dressed in a fine green silk dress, slit an itty bit up the side, revealing the hint of a figure as perfect as a man can only dream of, is adjusting the pins on her hat, crossing a laced ankle boot over the other foot, as she leans on the bar, and she's saying howdy to me. Once again, Pinky's mouth is wide open.
"You'll catch flies," she says to Pinky, and smiles through even pearl-white teeth.
Pinky mutters a flustered,
I gotta go, Caleb. Got chores and such."
He doesn't even drink his beer. Rushes out of the saloon. "Would you care for this?" I ask, pointing to Pinky's beer. "You ain't touched it."
"No, thank you, sir," says the lady. "But if you're offering, I wouldn't say no to a shot of tequila."
"Would you oblige the lady?" says I to the barkeep. The bartender pours up a shot and I hand him coin again.
"Nancy Marston," she says, stretching out her hand.
I shake it lightly, tip my hat and say, "Fancy Nancy." The lady smiles one of them knowing smiles, like it ain't the first time she's heard that.
"And you are?"
"Caleb," says I.
"Caleb, what?"
Nancy asks.
"Cleve,"
I reply. "Caleb Cleve."
"Cleve,"
says Nancy. "That's not a name you hear every day." "Well, ma'am," says I, "my pa came from Sweden, like a lot of others, looking for a better life. Guess he found it when he met up with my ma. He always said, Cleve. Leastways, that's how it sounded in my ears, though he wrote it C-L-E-V-E. So now you know everything about me, Miss Fancy Nancy."
"Sweden. I don't know much about that place," she says.
"Ain't many that do." I'm thinking I'm gonna drown in her eyes. Time is standing still.
I'm waiting for my father," she says.
"Uh-huh," I reply, not knowing what else to say. "Your health, ma'am," says I, raising my glass. "Sorry about joking with your name." She clinks her glass against mine, and we both drink. Before I have a chance to relax into more conversation, an older gentleman pushes the saloon doors aside and says gruffly, "Come along, Nancy." He puts out his arm and she takes it. As they leave, she looks back at me and smiles again and winks. All the folks have been watching and listening. They go back to talking amongst themselves. The barkeep leans over and whispers, "That ain't her father." "Now you got me curious," says I.
"Well, if you was to buy another drink," the barkeeper paused, "and me one, I might be able to fill you in on a few details."
Whiskey and money changes hands.
"The gentleman is Pius Marston. Don't know what his real name is, nobody does. Only been known as Pius ever since he came here to Yancey Creek. Nancy Marston is his, adopted daughter, if you understand my meaning.
The barkeep touches his nose with his forefinger and waves it at me as if he's trying not to let a secret slip out.
He's kind of church-going, closest thing we got to a minister. Yep, holds regular meetings for them as wants to cleanse their souls.
Barkeep pauses again.
Young feller you helped on his way to hell was his real son.
I'm about to say something, but the barkeep is still going.
Pius held the boy back, you know. Expected Lucius to follow him in the ways of the church, but the kid didn't want no part of it. Pius wept him regular when Lucius was young. I seen the scars. Folks felt sorry for him, till he begun carrying a gun, learning how to use it and mouthing off and such. Seems like he had a kind of death wish. Then as he growed up, he took a fancy to Nancy.
The barkeep laughs, playing with my words.
Pius weren't having none of that. Word has it he's planning to marry the gal himself.
Thanks, says I. Tip my hat and walk out. There's Macaulay, Josh, and Pinky hitching supplies to their horses and hauling sacks onto the wagon. It's getting late. I fixed rooms at the hotel, says Macaulay. Josh and Pinky are sharing. You and me got our own. Straighten everything out with the sheriff, too. He doesn't need to see you. Appreciate it, says I. There's only one thing I have to do before leaving for Macaulay's ranch. I have to see Nancy again. Can't get her out of my mind. Does she know I'm responsible for her brother's death? Oh, she can't do. How am I going to explain? I need to hit the hay. I'll find her in the morning. Bell tower clock chimes. I wake with a start. Throw my clothes on, buckle my gun belt, and ignoring shouts for breakfast, head out onto the sidewalk, carefully checking all the corners. Well now, I don't have to search far for Nancy. There she is, still wearing the green. She's with another lady friend.
Would you excuse me for a minute or two, Emmeline? I wish to exchange a few words with the gentleman.
Emmeline skedaddles, kind of giggling. Nancy grabs my arm and pulls me into an alleyway.
You're probably going to think this awful forward.
I, says I, and get no further than I.
Now don't interrupt young Caleb, says Fancy Nancy.
She's grinning, but there's an urgency in her voice.
I know what happened to my stepbrother, and I'm glad.
She can see the shocked look on my face and that I'm about to utter something. She puts her finger on my lips and says,
Shh, let me finish. I don't have much time. Lucius was always running after me. He cornered me once, held me up against a wall, and
she pauses for what seems like forever.
He violated me. Oh, no, it didn't come to anything, but he tried. He'd been trying for years. He began to hate me when I refused his advances. Anyway, he got bitter, took to drinking like they all do, and was becoming frightening, dangerous. He pulled a gun on me once. So, you see, you kind of saved my life.
I wanted to sweep her in my arms and kiss her right there and then. What about Pius? I ask.
Oh, he's got this idea in his head that we're going to marry. He feels he's protecting me, but it's never going to happen. It's his dream.
Have you told him?
Oh, yes.
Nancy pauses again.
He's jealous, like his son. He thinks he can win me round, but at least he's not a drinker, and therefore he's of a milder temper, but...
Another pause.
I need someone like you.
Nancy, we've only just met. I can't deny I get no farther. She reaches up and kisses me. I do not break away. The kiss is deep and long.
I must go now. Can we meet here again tomorrow, same time?
Sure, says I. I'm stunned. I wonder if, like Pinky, my mouth is hanging on the ground.
Tomorrow, then,
says Nancy, and moves quickly away from me. As she does so, she almost bumps into Pius Marston. Pius glares at me, grabs Nancy roughly by the arm, and pulls her toward him. "Have you no shame, girl? You're coming with me, and you'll get no more than you deserve."
"Have you been following me?"
says Nancy. He begins to drag her down the street. "That's enough, Mr. Marston," I hollered at him. "That ain't no way to treat a lady, especially this one. You be kind to her now, you hear?" Marston's face begins to turn red. I feared what was coming. In one and the same swift lunge, he throws Nancy to the ground and with his opposite hand reaches for the small pistol tucked into his belt. "Don't, please don't, Mr. Marston." I know by his angle and hold that he's no gunman. I let him get off a round. It goes through my coat lapel, stinging my shoulder, and drawing a small trickle of blood. Now he's charging at me, figuring, I guess, that pure rage is the answer. He's cocked the hammer. Suddenly he stops. He turns and points his gun at Nancy. That's it for me. My single shot through the back of his neck makes him whirl round to face me. He's not but 2 feet away. He stares blankly as blood gushes from his neck. Then he's dead before he hits the ground. I holster my .45 just as quick as I drew it. I take out my timepiece from my vest pocket. I'm guessing the entire event has been no more than 3 minutes. McCauley's by my side. "Damn it, Caleb, you could have winged him. You didn't have to shoot to kill." Pinky is crouching, trying to hide behind a post, half the size of him. I mutter quietly, "I done what I do best."
"Caleb!"
I hear Nancy yell as she's helped to her feet by Emmeline and led away. Sheriff is banging his hat on the side of his leg. "Son and father, holy... I saw it all, but I have to take you in, son." My peacemaker once again finds its way into my hand. "Sorry, Sheriff. I'll be on my way. Pinky, get my horse." My .45 still on the sheriff, I mount and hightail it out of town. I hope this letter makes the distance, even though we're miles and miles apart. Yours eternally, Caleb. I look around the brush I've stopped and hid myself in while I write. I'm quite alone. I put the letter in my saddlebag. I guess one day I might mail it.